Blog Talk Radio.
And of course, that is the one and only, the legendary Miles Davis. My name is Eric Payne. You have reached the K Thompson Live Show. I am the co-host, one of the co-hosts, Eric Payne. And you are?
I am K Thompson, and I'm also the other co-host. And we're waiting to hear from Wayne Gilmey. And also, you know, that music is so great by Miles Davis.
Right.
You know, I got a chance to talk to him a lot when I was working at New Jersey Network Television. And he basically turned his back on us.
Okay.
I guess we, at that time, you know, we weren't big enough to really talk to him, but he was, you know, an intense musician. He was absolutely fantastic.
Right.
And his music goes on and on and on. I tell you, I love it. I love it. So I'm so glad he chose us, you know, for today, Eric.
Right. Today is February 25th, I believe.
Yeah.
And there are some things in the news in the past week. You have some topics that you might have noticed that you want to comment on, Mom?
Yeah, one thing that I'm really concerned about is the fact that Homeland Security is an issue in Congress. And between the Republicans and the Democrats, you know, battling back and forth, I've noticed that I think that the Republicans have, they're threatening not to finance or put some money in Homeland Security.
Right.
And I don't know what in the world they're thinking of, because the fact that Homeland Security is so important, they guard the borders of the United States of America.
Well, before you go any further, they just was on the an update is that they voted in the Senate to fund it, and that particular bill and send it back to the House of Representatives. The whole thing was whether this particular funding resolution to continue funding the Department of Homeland Security was going to be what they call a clean vote or up and down vote, which means they do not attach any amendments or things like that, which would then cause people to vote against the bill. What happens a lot of times is that they'll put an amendment on the bill. They'll have agreement with both parties, and someone will try to get tricky and put an amendment on the bill, which is something that the other party is against. And that's what causes a lot of the hold up in Congress. When they have these bills that they're trying to pass, and then somebody try to be slick and put something into an amendment, which then causes the bill to be something that the other side, which had already agreed to vote for the bill, which then causes them to not vote for the bill. So that it appears that the bill passed in the Senate, so now it has to go back to the House. But you are right, it's pretty ridiculous that they are willing to put the security of the country up.
That's right.
And just even float the idea just because they want to oppose the president. We have a caller in. We're going to turn your mic on, caller. And who is that there, our guest then?
Who is that?
Go ahead, caller.
It's me, you know, from a voice from the past. And it's such a privilege to be on with you and your co-host there, Eric. You know, we've walked a few miles together, and for us to be here on here is just really cool.
Right, and let me just give you the for folks who don't know, that is the one and only Antonio Fargas, actor extraordinaire, Mr. Antonio Fargas, has joined us this evening. Mr. Fargas. And I think we also our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Is that you, Mr. Gilman, that you've just called in now?
That's right. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening to you. You called in at the perfect time because you've called in to experience Mr. Antonio
Fargas.
My goodness, I'm going to drop to my knees now.
Please, don't. You know, I love that story, Kay, where you talked about, you know, Miles Davis. I mean, to have been privileged to be able to have your back, you know, have Miles Davis turn his back on you, that was a privilege. And, you know, as I was listening, and it was only one of a kind, because I feel that way sometimes about the shenanigans and all that stuff that goes on in Washington. I wish I could be like Miles and just turn my back because, you know, we get caught up in these things, but they're necessary to get caught up, and somebody's got to do the dirty work and to, you know, to stand on guard and to be on the front lines like Jack Nicholson talked about in A Few Good Men. You know, about, you know, you want me on that line. You need me on that line. You know, and then you want to question the methods I do to get the job done. Well, you know, President Obama has certainly been called into question like no other president has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I respect the fact that he's on that front line getting that, earning every gray hair that comes in his head and everything else because, you know, that's what it takes, you know, and I'm so proud of the fact that we are on guard to just be witnesses to, you know, to history and for us, you know, to be a part of history and you know how long we've known each other as Eric and the family, you know, from days of Universal Images in New Jersey, man, and here we are. And here I am, you know. I mean, I started in this business when I was 14 years old, and this summer will be my 55th year in the business. So
wow.
You put those numbers together, you know, I'll be 69 this summer, August 14th. And, you know, I've never been happier and never been busier. And just trying to be relevant in my community by working with young people and still living in Las Vegas, making, you know, the center of the world is right here, and the center of the world is where we all are, each and every one of us, and to know that we can be connected by an internet and a worldwide web that makes every person can be where they are and still be connected. That's some technology that's remarkable. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I want to ask you something, Antonio. A lot of people know you by Huggy Bear. Just so I'm just saying that for people when they're turning in, they'll probably think, well, who is he?
Right.
Huggy Bear.
Well, more and more currently, they know that the legendary Starsky and Hutch and Huggy Bear character, but more currently, the more recent millennial generation, so to speak, probably know you as the character you played on the Chris Rock show, right? Everybody hates Chris.
The character's name was Doc, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then you go back from there, you know, I was Debbie Morgan's father on All My Children. And
right.
And, of course, before that, I was Fly Guy and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. And before that, I was I was a tailor lawyer in Sanford and Son. And then before that, I guested on Will Smith's show, and not only Chris Rock, Will Smith, Snoop Dogg, and Martin. There was a classic show called All the Players
Martin.
Came that was on Martin.
Yes.
You know, I've truly been blessed by young people in the business who know whose shoulders they stand on, and they have a sense of history, and they all gave me jobs in their series or their projects because they have a respect for what I did for them in order to make it possible for, you know, for them to be where they are. And that is an honor that's humbling. You know, I always talk about when I was doing a play in London and just outside of London in a small town, cause they have a very strong theater community in every city in the UK. And I had to take a taxi to the theater every night to do my show. And inevitably, in this town that I was in, that almost every one of the taxi drivers said, Antonio, you don't have to pay me for this short taxi ride because I just want to thank you for what you did for me. Because I had to take my bath, do my homework in order to watch Starsky and Hutch because, you know, television impacted places around the world. That show was syndicated in over 100-something countries. And so, I mean, that international power of television, and now add that to the international power of the Internet, and you have, you know, people, I can go sit in a restaurant, and before I know it, someone comes up to me with a cell phone and says, "There you are," because they Google me, you know, and
yeah.
they so they know all about me before I even leave the restaurant. So that's
and
how
that's
powerful in the world that we live in.
And that's the interesting thing that you talk about all these years later, because, you know, actors, that's why I started talking about Chris Rock showing other things, because, you know, actors, sometimes we don't like to be pigeonholed with that one role. Some people get upset that you always talk about that one role that really made them.
If that's all you got sometimes. But I have a healthy respect for the 4 years that I put in on Starsky and Hutch, because it gave me a foundation,
yeah.
and as again,
yeah.
becoming a worldwide face, because television is that
yeah.
powerful. I could do a play for 20
yeah.
years with full houses on Broadway and still not reach as many people as I do on the night of a syndicated show around the world,
yeah.
On television. So
that's
the power of the...
That's exactly true, Antonio. I don't want to cut you off, but what you say about that, and that was a pivotal show. You know, Starsky and Hutch is a classic American show, and now, like we said, with video and, you know, at one time, I remember it was the video cassettes, and you could watch stuff again in DVDs, and now on the Internet, and what the Internet not only allows you to do, it's almost like you can stay in your own little favorite era in your life. My buddy of mine and I were talking about on YouTube, where you can go to YouTube and find old shows. You can go to any Netflix or these sites, find old TV series that were favorite of yours. But you can also go to YouTube and find old trailers for the upcoming TV season that ABC did in 1970.
Yeah.
And so people can literally live in a time warp if they want, or you can just focus on all your favorite TV shows from all time, and still, you know, it's really given a kind of longevity to actors that have been in the game for a long time.
There's no throwaway. There's nothing thrown away anymore. You know, there's nothing
exactly.
that can be lost, and there's so much stuff can be recovered. You know, not only through forensic science, but through the technology that we have, that we can recreate and go back. I mean, I get lost on YouTube just looking at music video clips. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just so much stuff. That, you know, and again, you know, you can go to a concert today and they don't even stop you from taking your cell phone in there. Before the concert's over, it's already on Facebook and different, wherever it is, you know. That's how powerful that stuff is.
And to really give Antonio his props, you know, you the characters that you played in during the era of the blaxploitation era that you were a part of, you are a cultural icon, as you know.
Yeah.
You, Antonio Fargas, and the characters you play are a cultural icon, which is why cats like Snoop Dogg and a lot of the hip-hop guys, and I experienced this a little bit with working with Spike and Juice and things like that. But these young cats, they watch those movies. And maybe their parents had them.
So they
watched them growing up, so they became favorites of their childhood. And there's something special about when you are a part of somebody's upbringing.
Yeah.
When you're they remember you as a part of the fabric of their life, of their childhood. And you are one of those individuals where people look at you and say, "My man," and they remember those times when they were young, not only the enjoyment of watching you work on screen or on TV, but where you were in their life.
Yeah.
And so
those young artists can sample and channel me, because, you know, that's what sampling is about. They are able to sample my contributions, because they're written in the indelible media and in their minds. And again, people watching shows when you're young and very impressionable. That's the thing. When you come into somebody's life and you help, when I talk to people and I go into these offices and if the executive in the office is 30 or is 40 something years old, I say I help raise you, because when you were 15, when you were 5. You were watching Starsky and Hutch, or 10, you were watching Starsky and Hutch, because that was like 37 years ago. So anybody who's like 50, they were like 10 or 15 years old, whatever, when Starsky and Hutch, and that's a very impressionable time. And to be able to have the contributions and to be the variety of stuff that I did, man, there's a book called The Celluloid Closet, which talks about actors who played gay roles back in the day. And I've been honored to be in that book because of Car Wash, because of Next Stop Greenwich Village, because of Ambush Murders, I mean, I was doing those roles and taking chances with those roles before it was popular. Now you got Brokeback Mountain, you got all these people and everybody coming out of the closet and saying, you know, and becoming, I mean, last year's Academy Awards, you know what I mean, with Matthew McConaughey. I mean, all those stories. And then, was it Denzel and when he did the story about AIDS and all that. All these characters now, people are, you know, are getting so many props because they've taken chances on giving these characters dignity before it was cool to do that. And every one of the characters that I played had that kind of dignity.
And isn't that great? Because the fact that your name will stay alive and what you did will stay alive, and it's important. It's important you've gone through that very period. And it really brings back so many pleasant memories also.
Right. And just to put a button in, I want to finish your point on the gay characters, Antonio, because next up, Greenwich Village, for actors, especially my generation of actors that were coming up and wanted to watch those movies that reflected the business in a time before we were. My era, you know, I came of age in the 70s, 80s, early 80s, and so I know that I wanted to see shows about actors in the 70s and 60s. And so, and just the life that they led. And so that show, that movie, Next Stop Greenwich Village, about a group of artists in Greenwich Village. And it took place, you guys were like in the 60s, right? The late 60s at least, right?
Yeah, with Christopher Walken and Bill Murray and all those people who were in that film. And the thing is that, you know, doing characters is not just the providence of Jamie Cagney and Clint Eastwood, but you know, to be an African American actor who lived in characters and made my living by doing characters, urban characters, street characters, you know, by playing people with drug problems, paying pimps, doing all that stuff, and bringing a dignity and a light on, I mean, and I'm going to get you, sucker. I mean, to bring it and doing it in a comedic way and putting a button on an era and being proud of our contributions in bringing the stories of our urban stories and giving them credibility and giving them exposure and making, because I know that how proud I was to be able to go to see Sidney Poitier in a movie and to realize that, you know, for me, when I did my first film, The Cool World was going to be up on the screen like those people in Hollywood and all the white faces that I saw, you know, doing that, to know that I was also going to be doing that. And it not only did it empower me and give me courage, and I know whose shoulders I stand on, but it gave, you know, it gave you, Eric, and it gave a lot of people, you know, to say, you know what, that brother can do it, you know, I can do it. And that's, you know, that's the beauty of passing this stuff on, you know.
Yeah, and I got to, you know, let people know that Antonio Fargas is one of the people that I met that was really like a mentor to me to take it to the next level. When it was said that you were going to come to the Theater of Universal Images and work on this show, I was like, I'm going to get to know Antonio Fargas. Huggy Bear, and see what he knows, and see if he can help me. And you always have been great mentor.
You came from success. You came from a strong family background, and you had, you know, and you had a hunger for this deal. You know, that wasn't just born, you know, because you saw me, but it was born, you know, went through the fact that success was. Not having success was not really an option, and I take that back to you, to your co-host and, you know, and your dad and all of that. But for me to be a part of the foundation of your artistic side and to be, you know, to have that privilege of being able to help, and I continually do that to young artists who come up to me and who can, you know, if you want to have my email address, you can get it. I mean, I give people access. Sometimes people don't even believe that, you know, that I'll call them back and all those kind of things, but that's what I do, and I realize that has been, you know, that has been my, you know, my goal, and it also, I think, kept me humble to be able to know that I'm helping somebody else, and, you know, and not just thinking about, you know, what I can get out of the deal.
I think it's
I think that's so important.
Go ahead, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say, forgive me, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I really think that's so important because you don't really see a lot of that today. And, Antonio, I just think it's an honor just to, you know, I don't know if you recall, but we go way back when I started out in the radio business doing an interview with you. This is like shortly after Putney Swope. I met you through
the
late Clayton Riley. You remember Clayton?
Yes.
And if memory serves, I know you got some Trini in you. Are you? I know you have some roots in Trini. All right.
My mother's side, and my mother was born in Cuba, but you know, Trinidad, Grenada, and her father, my grandfather, went to Cuba to work in the sugar mills because he was like an engineer, moved around the Caribbean, and I have one aunt that was born in Panama, and my mother was born in Cuba. And my dad's Puerto Rican, and they met in New York and had 11 children, and I was number 3.
Unbelievable.
And and this is it, man. This is it.
And a lot of the family's still in the New York area, I gather.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Good.
Coming home is really, like, really, really kind of special today. See how things have changed, but nothing changes, and... you know, and then, you know, so many people who are not here. I mean, as you get to be my age, you know more people, you know, hear more about people leaving, you know, who I call their life show is closed. And those that are beginning. And and to realize, you know, after all these years, the cherry on the cake for my career and my life is to realize that it was a spiritual journey, that all this was preordained. And there was nothing I could do to avoid this conversation tonight. None of us could do, you know, to have this day, you know, is all we got. You know, I don't know if tomorrow is not promised, but I know today is almost in the books.
And Tony, I want to know what you're working on now, and let everybody know what you're doing.
What I'm working on? Well, I think I told you I'm working on an. I have a band called the New Jump Blues, and we put out a CD, and we had the privilege of playing at one of the meccas of music in Los Angeles, the Hollywood Bowl, at the Playboy Jazz Festival. We were one of the early acts that went on, but what a privilege to work that and to have music in my life today. There's a CD called The New Jump Blues. It's on iTunes. So if people want to check it out, you can also go to thenewjumpblues.com. I'm also working, you know, I have quite an extended family. You know, I'm being married 3 times. I have a big family. And one of my stepsons, I'm working on a movie with my son, Matthew. He's producing a movie called Beyond Skyline. And we shot some of it in Indonesia in December. And I'm going back before the cameras in early March to finish up my portion of the film. And I'm also, in fact, I was in a meeting just before I came on the air with you guys talking about a project, a series, a sci-fi series, and also got a movie that I'm working on that's called, let me look at this. The cover of the script here. Where the hell is it? Where is it? This is a horror film called Beethoven 666. You heard it here. And so, I mean, life is good. Life, I've been busy. I mean, I call myself being semi-retired living here in Las Vegas, but I'm more busy than I've ever been. When I sometimes say I should go back to working full time because I wasn't as busy as I was now, as I've, you know, and how full my life is now that I'm semi-retired, and I realized that it's been a spiritual journey, and I can take my foot off the gas and take my hands off the wheel and trying to drive and steer my career, because it's all been, you know, it has been guided when I trust, you know, and I trust you know, that higher power, God, whatever, you know, that I'm going to be right where I'm supposed to be, and I only got what I was supposed to get, instead of having to always be hungry and searching and running and looking for, you know, and all that stuff, that I can just relax and let the game come to me, and there's still plenty of game left.
We're so glad that you are still around and you have plenty of game left, Antonio. And
no shame in my game, and I got plenty of it.
That's really, Antonio, you say that, but that's really kind of the truth about the acting. You know, you first jump out there, you're trying to put the pedal to the metal.
You're trying too hard, but that's part of being young. You got to have that hunger. You got to say, I'll do everything. I'll do all that. And then you realize, you know what? You know, that if I just relax, you know, it's almost like the pitcher, you know, who swings at everything. But now when you start being selective about the balls you swing at, and when you when you understand when a baseball player says, I almost can see the stitching on the ball. I can see the spin of the ball now. It's not just a ball, you know, flying past you anymore. And when you get your timing down in terms of your life, and, you know, also when you get to the right seat on the bus of life, you know. And now I'm in the right seat on the bus of life. I've been in it a long time, but I always was trying to force it and make it bigger, smaller, and all this kind of stuff. But now I'm relaxing, and that seat just conforms to my particular body. And I'm cool with that. Anytime it gets tight, it's because I'm start thinking outside of the seat, you know what I mean? You know, I like thinking outside of the box, but I realize that if I'm in a box, I might as well get comfortable, you know. And if I move to the next one, then I better get comfortable because that's where I live. Now, when I travel, I take my – this has been a long time, but I used to go travel and go to hotels and live in places, and I would never unpack. And then my manager told me one time, he said, you know, you live there. That's where you live. You can put all your stuff away. Put it, you know what I mean, and you'd be surprised how much more relaxed I am when, you know, when home is where where the heart is and where the hat is, you know, and, you know, because you can't be, staying present is so important for an actor and for anybody in life is to stay in the moment, you know, and to be present in the moment, not in the future, not in the past, not in 5 hours from now. But right on the moment, and right now I'm in the moment with you guys, and I'm really very, very pleased, and I'm already. Only thing I'm looking for in the future is to be able to do this again, you know, and with you guys, and hopefully when I get back east to actually see you, because it's been a while since we broke bread or just hung out and, you know, and had a laugh, because laughter and tears are important. Tears are important. Because it gets us to laughter, and you know. But if I have a choice, I need to have tears in order to have laughter, and I prefer laughter. And I'm laughing a lot more today. I'm smiling more. You know, when I was a young actor, it was hard for me to do scenes where I had to laugh. And today, I can find that laughter much more. It was much more easier for me to play tragedy and, you know, and the down stuff because that's the stuff that I saw around me. That's the stuff that I lived and was trying to get free from. Today, you know, there's a peace that gives me accessibility. I can access my tears. I can access my laughter better than I've ever done before. And I'm better at what I do today than I was 30 years ago, you know. Talk about like fine wine gets better with time and all that other stuff. Well, it is true. If you keep working it, you get better. And
You know,
and that's
Antonio,
for everybody.
I wanted to say about you, I mean, you know, we just had the Oscars the other day, and I really, you know, as someone who's been in the business for a while now, and I've had some perspective on it, and I realized really when I look at friends of mine and people like you, your careers, you know, you really understand that it's not about the sprint in this business, as they say. It's about the longevity. That's how you can measure the success of an actor, the longevity. And your longevity, like I said, you're a cultural icon yourself, and you're a character type. You know, people want to have – I mean, you put a stamp not only on the business because, you know – and I'm getting into the weeds here with some real acting stuff. But, you know, actors can come and go, and they can play a scene efficiently – they can play by the numbers and just hit all the numbers, but it takes something extra to bring an essence of yourself to a role where they remember not only the role, but the actor who played the role. And the actor who played the role brings so much to the role that they become larger than the role, so people remember that person. And that's what you've been for these people, for people throughout our lives. I mean, part of it, obviously, is in your carriage, and the way you were able to tune into your instrument, you know, and just kind of from a physical standpoint, how I think that as I look at my career, I look at your career, and what I've learned is that when you, like you said, when you let go, and what I've learned in those times when I worked a lot is when I was in tune to how I impress people, the impression that one has when you first meet when they first meet you. So once you realize that, once I realized that, I was able to control a little bit how my auditions went. If I came into the room with that essence of what they wanted, and if I came into the room as bigger than the character. And I think we have someone else here that is also could also be a part of this conversation. Caller, we have a new caller on the line. Who is?
Guess who it is? Hello. Hi, Antonio.
Hi,
Gene.
Is it Gina?
Hi, Antonio. It's Gina.
Your voice hasn't changed.
And neither has yours.
That's right.
Hi, Mom.
That's
hi, Wayne.
Right, you know?
Hey.
Hi, how you doing, Gina?
Good, good.
So
listen,
you're calling from your palatial estate in the Bahamas? Or where are you?
Yep,
Virgin
in Bermuda.
I'm in Bermuda.
I'm still in Bermuda. Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice, Antonio. I wish you would go on Facebook, but I see you're not on Facebook.
I don't like no Facebook. I don't
know. All right.
You know,
all right.
I give people my email address and my phone number. That's all you need.
Yeah,
I had that. I just texted you actually a few minutes ago. I was trying to call in, but listen, you have a fan, as you probably know, a fan page on Facebook. Nonetheless, I'm saying that because you know, I know a lot of people don't like to use it and whatnot. However, this whole week since I spoke to you via text the other day, I looked at your website and I looked at your New Jack
Blues,
and it's so nice. Yeah, so I've been posting some of your videos from that, and if you guys haven't seen it, it's really good, and I'm really enjoying that you are enjoying yourself on stage.
Yeah,
and the music is great. And my favorite one, I think, is. Go ahead.
You showed me something.
I just posted it, you know, so for people to see it was Antonio, you know, that you're still out and about and doing stuff. And listen, it's a delay, so sorry if I'm talking over you, but I just have a quick comment question. I didn't hear the very beginning of your conversation, so I don't know if you've already covered this, but a lot of people ask me, and I'm, you know, wanting to know also, how do you feel about your iconic roles that you played, starting with Huggy Bear being the first thing that people mention about you when you've done so much beyond that? Does that bother you or not?
No, we did 20 minutes on that before you.
Okay.
So you missed all of that.
Yeah.
You missed all that, but again, I've got a rock and roll. I got a roll. I got to get going. So I have to sign off, but we'll do this again.
Yes, we will.
And let's stay close as family, friends, and keep doing the wonderful things that you're doing, Kay. And Eric, you know, you're about mid journey now, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's so much more out there, and Gina, it's wonderful. I enjoyed seeing the photographs of your family and all of that. That's so cool. So cool.
Yeah, well, I know you have to go, but I just wanted to thank you because when you did come to Bermuda that time, all those years ago, you were nice enough to do a promo for me for my television show, and you know, got a lot of comments, good comments about that, and I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. It's good to hear. I'm glad it was. You know, that it was useful and informative and all that stuff. And, you know, we don't give to the charity that asks or the cause. We give to the person that asks them. And so so your side, your family has always been there for me. And likewise, I try to reciprocate that. And we just continue to do that because somebody's got to do this. You know what I mean? We...
Yeah.
Antonio, thank you for calling in. Thank you for being a part of the show. And I really appreciate that. We
thank
will
you.
Do this again. And say hello to Angela Ellaby. You know, it's all a part
of
it.
I will.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot.
All right, now, thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay,
Eric,
see you.
Give me a call.
Great. Instead of another interview. What we're doing now, and Wayne and Gina is still on. And we're waiting to hear from Richard Wesley. Richard, as you all know, is quite a writer, a playwriter, He's written so many books. He's an author, Mandela, and the clerk, or some of us say Uptown Saturday Night, and so many things. Anyway, Richard is going to be speaking in the program at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, downtown Newark. And that's going to be this Friday night, as a matter of fact, and people should come on down because it is a free thing, you know, and for us to be able to hear Richard Wesley, you know, and talk about his work and everything is going to be really, really extraordinary. So, and there's so many things, as you might know, Gene, is happening in Wayne, happening in downtown Newark, so many things. And
I tell you.
And a lot of these playwrights is black cultural, and, you know, just things that, you know, really make a lot of sense for the growth and the economics of it, of the city. The one thing that I'm concerned about right now still is that I'm talking until we get Richard on the line, Richard Wesley on the line, waiting for him to call in. And, you know, that is the educational system, you know, in Newark. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be moving in the direction that people need for it to move into because of the fact that they do have a lot of issues with this new movement of students from school to school and having to go to schools outside of their own neighborhoods. So that's another thing that we are concerned about with downtown Newport. He's coming along. So we really thank Antonio for calling in. He will never be forgotten, and he's working on a whole lot of things. And while we're waiting for Richard, you know, Eric, why don't we talk a little bit about the Grammys and some of the awards? How does that happen?
Let me, go ahead, Gina.
I for the past 2 days I've had my profile picture on Facebook changed, and I put the picture of Zendaya up. And that's the teenage Disney actor Zendaya. So I don't know if you're familiar, Ma, with that, what's going on with that. But
right.
At the Oscars, she walked the red carpet on the Oscars with this beautiful gown on. She's an 18-year-old, just turned 18, Disney star, and she also did Dancing with the Stars and, you know, got a lot, and I think, I don't know if she won, I think she may have won. Nonetheless, on Fashion Police on E!, one of the, you know, there's joke with people and what they look like and, you know, what they have on and stuff, but Juliana Rancic, one of the hosts, said something really nasty. She said, you know, Zendaya was wearing her hair in dreadlocks, and Zendaya, the co-host said, she looks like, she smells like patchouli oil and weed, and it was so incredibly offensive.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
It was so offensive, and it was such a backlash, and this young girl had this really classy, eloquent response to her, and in essence, what she said was, you know, there's a fine line between, you know, being funny and being disrespectful. And she said something to the effect that I wore my dreadlocks with pride. I don't know if you know, but my father wears dreadlocks. My cousins and my brothers wear dreadlocks. And then she went on to mention, I don't know if you're aware, but also Ledisi, who sang the score for Selma, and also the director of Selma, I forget her name, wears dreadlocks. Then she also went on to say,
right,
like, you know, one of the professors at Yale wears dreadlocks. And then she mentioned a few other people, and she mentioned, a few other people. And basically, this young girl was able to come back with such an eloquent and classy response at such a disgusting and foul and racist, stereotypical, you know, comment. And it upset me so much because, first of all, you know, she's 18 years old, and for having an adult to be, you know, criticizing and speaking so nastily and negatively about our youth, our young actors and musicians, black or white, it always bothers me because I have a 20-something year old daughter, and I would hate if somebody treated me the way they carry on about Britney Spears or Justin Bieber or whatever. Now here you have Zendaya, 18 years old, coming out with pride in her dreadlocks, and this lady says that. Well, there's such backlash, and now Zendaya has so much support from so many people. But that's, you know, that's the sort of thing that's in the news. And I made her my profile picture just to stand in solidarity in support of her. What do you guys think of that?
Oh, that's great. That's great. Who was the host again, Gina, if you don't mind? I didn't get
Juliana Rancic.
That was
Juliana Rancic on E! Yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
It's all over the media. You've got to see it. It's sickening, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, I happen to be watching, just happen to have the TV on. It's ironic you said that today. You know, I happen to have the TV on, and I had it on Channel 2, and the talk came on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really paying attention until I heard Cheryl Underwood was talking about, I overheard her say something that we were sitting on this show, and I said something about my people that I had to apologize for, and we were sitting here with a group of white women talking about black woman's hair. And so I had to rewind it to see what they were talking about. And then I rewound it all the way, and I saw that they were talking about on the talk, which, by the way, Kelly Osbourne's mom is the host of, one of the hosts of, Sharon Osbourne. And then and on the Fashion Police, Kelly Osbourne is one of the people who are on the panel. And then I realized what they were talking about, the whole issue. And, you know, and Kelly put out a tweet, you know, they were saying that Kelly Osbourne put out a tweet as well, saying that she might not want to do the show anymore because somehow people thought that she was in on the comment with Juliana, which she wasn't, in fact. And then Zendaya and her are friends. That's what Sharon Osbourne said. And also Kelly kind of looked at her. People said if you looked at the way Kelly looked at her when she said that, you gave her a look. And also, what's her face?
Yeah, I looked
that
at it over and over again. She did. She was not a part of it at all. She was taken aback by it, you know.
Right. And Cheryl Underwood really kind of put it in perspective for Juliana Rancic. You know, she was saying how she said how she apologized, and she said, you know, I said something that really insulted my community, and I had to make amends for it with my people. And she said, you know, these people want to apologize, and they don't really want to apologize. They want to say, if I offended anybody, if I did that. She's like, the way you apologize is say, what I said was wrong. I apologize for what I said if I hurt anybody, and I'm sorry for what I said. She said, people want to hear that. And the audience, of course, clapped in agreement with that. So it's ironic that you're talking about that.
The other thing that who brought it up too was on The View, Whoopi. Whoopi attacked that. And she was insulted, she said, because she wears dread and so forth.
Exactly.
And, she was insulted herself by what this woman said. And to me, she doesn't, the person who said that does not belong to be on because does not, you know, merit being on. Because for her to say something like that and have as little information about our hair and how we wear it, that's absurd. She's supposed to be
Well, you also, too, if I could just jump in, you got to understand, and what she actually said was, when I look at her, I expect to smell patchouli oil and weed, and it's not Fashion Police, so I guess some of them kind of got into wanting to take up Joan Rivers' place, you know, remember Joan, and maybe you would be able to talk about that a little bit more than I could, Gina, but Joan would always kind of... you know, do Joan's bit where she would snap on people, but also comment on that. So I guess maybe, and people always accept it with Joan Rivers because that's always been who she's been. So I don't know if Juliana Rancic, who I never was particularly impressed with, and I never could understand why she was on TV at all. And I've seen her in real life on a show that I worked on, and I was not impressed at all. But, you know, I guess she thought that she could kind of, you know, take Joan's place and kind of say these kind of insulting quips when not realizing how racist it kind of came off. And the whole impressive thing about it was how Zendaya responded, right? That's what really got the press up.
Yeah, that was really
classy. Yeah.
But that happened.
I just think it's just so highly offensive. I mean, and the thing is that the hairstyle in itself is nothing new. I could see if you're in some sort of cultural or historical or information vacuum, that hairstyle's been around for almost 40 years now in terms of it being popular. You know, it's always been something in our community. But, you know, who was it? Bo Derek, I think, the first white actress to come out publicly and start wearing dreadlocks or braids and things like that
in
the day, you know, it, you know, it, you'd have to be, I don't know what planet that you're on that you're not familiar with this, and to just do it as a measure of degrading someone, I just think it's, I don't know. I mean, people need to be vetted out before they're given the responsibility of being on a show like that.
Right, she was trying to be funny and be cute at the same time without realizing what she was saying. Or then that just shows up to her lack of intelligence. However, she shouldn't even be on the air. If she's going to make
it. You know, the other day there was someone, Kay, on the. I was just going to say there was someone on the internet, at least I saw a story on the internet, a newscaster who used a racially offensive word to describe somebody's dancing on TV. It wasn't an East Coast broadcaster, but someone who, I guess, co-hosts the 11 o'clock news or the 9 o'clock news at night, and they said they used the word, and forgive me, jigaboo. All right?
Jigaboo,
and
yeah.
And everyone on the
she
set
was talking
knew
about
what that
Lady
was
Gaga.
About.
Yeah.
Oh, was it her?
Yeah, it was there. She
was
talking about Lady Gaga that
hurt. Yeah. One of the newscasters I made mention. And I'm just saying, what planet are you on, lady?
Yeah,
I mean, that,
that.
You now, it's some unknown broadcaster in the Midwest. And the thing is, there was such an uproar behind it. Thank God people were watching and listening, and people knew what the essence and the origin of what the word was all about. It was no different than saying, you know, the N-word. And, you know, it just amazes me how, you know, a lot of these people, to get opportunities to get on the box, and I don't know if the companies, they don't vet them out or get their understand what their backgrounds are about or what level of education they've received. But, you know, you got to be so careful when you go on. That was just one of those things that, you know, when we were reared in the business going back in the day, that, you know, there were certain things you said, and then there are things that you just don't say, period. And,
well, the person
that
I was going to say, if that person is using the phrase jigaboo, you can best believe they know what they were saying.
Sure they do.
And they were trying to get a little dig in like they constantly try to do. It's just that you're always surprised. They never cease to amaze me at the nerve and just the lack of taste, really the hatred that comes out that some of these people, you know, it's surprising. And now with the internet, things like that, where you can see everything that everybody's saying, it's just a matter of it's being brought to the forefront.
Yeah, but I tell you, Eric, the thing that bothers me is if you do it willfully, if you like this Juliana, you know, she does it willfully, the broadcast in the Midwest there, I mean, they had to have some concept. I mean, in the 40 years I've been doing this, the worst mistake I made was my second day on the air at WLIB. I sat next to the late, great Eddie O'J. We were doing a newscast, and the mic was open, and I said the F word. And I didn't know the mic was open. I turned to Eddie. He said, you know, this is your last day, son. And I'm looking at him, and I see the previous owners walk in, because obviously everyone heard what I had to say. And I said it in anger because I was upset with somebody in the control room who played the wrong insert for a newscast. And the deal is, after that experience, I never got around a live mic and uttered, or even a dead mic. I tried not to get around anything live or dead and say something that, you know, clearly, you know, it's something that you learn, you know?
But wait, you were still on the air, apparently, so they didn't get rid of you because you were off for so long.
Well, I mean, it was my second day, but I've learned from my mistake, you know.
It sounds like that guy, that kid who said, you know, his first day, I forget the kid's name, he came and went, he was on all the talk shows after it, but he was on, it was his first day on, the black mixed kid. And he was on a Fox affiliate or something, and he cursed because he missed said a name or something, and he thought he was not on, and he was on. It was amusing, you know, but and he thought he would get a second chance. Al Roker said he should have a second chance, but he actually never recovered from it, although he did like all of the late night circuits. It was, you know, it's amusing, but it is something you have to learn. But about the Juliana Rancic thing, the thing is, like you said, Eric, I watch that show. I love all those entertainment shows. It's those are my guilty pleasures. I watch that. Juliana Rancic is not Joan Rivers. Like you said, Joan Rivers is known. That's her shtick. She's been around for 100 years. So for Joan to say something like that, true enough, people probably would have maybe winced, well, that's Joan. But Joan, she's not limited in her comments from one race over the other. Coming from Juliana, who is not a comic, rather just some chick, like you said, on TV, who thinks that she can have that same sort of banter, is not no. She said that, and it came off to me. I think I'm very forgiving, and I don't call for people to be fired. But she said it so comfortably that I could see her sitting around with her friends or her husband saying that about a lot of people. So her slip was showing. And that I don't appreciate. Now, if it was, you know, like I said, if it was Joan or even if it was Kathy Griffin, but for Juliana, that rubbed me wrong. I could see that chick sitting around her friends, not thinking any of us are watching, and having those same sorts of comments. And that I don't forgive, because that is who you are.
Well, and the thing really is, that's true. That's exactly what it is. That's her showing who she truly is. And what happens is that what we found, even in the House of Representatives, is that a lot of these people have become so comfortable saying, I mean, it's like a knee-jerk reaction. It almost jumps out of them before they have a chance to edit their thoughts. But it really is, they become comfortable just saying these kind of racial things, and they think it's going to be all right. I mean, and I think a lot of it, I don't know about a lot of it, but there's some truth to it being, you know, with the black president, a lot of these people just been losing their mind. They just want to, you know, they're having a hard enough time keeping the N-word in their mouth, you know, just having Tourette's or something. They just say all kind of crazy stuff. And as I said, someone like Juliana, you know, she hardly, you know, if you want to get down and play in the dozen, and, you know, the picture of Zendaya, you know, and she said it so, like you said, a matter of fact, in such a flippant manner.
Yep.
And if you listen, if you've seen the type of dreadlocks, she's talking about, and the type of dreadlocks that actually Zendaya had in that picture, why would you even make a comment like that, but unless you're going straight for the racial, which is obviously what she did.
Yeah, I just Googled her, and now I'm familiar with who you're talking about, and I always thought she looked like a scarecrow. I mean, I'm not impressed at all, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's before, you know, because I watch the show for entertainment, you know, and I like to see the fashions and stuff, and Joan Rivers always, you know, cracks me up anyway. So, but I've heard, you know, Juliana say things in the past that she thought were funny. She's not a comedian, so it definitely didn't come off right. And but I think to end the point on the fact that this young girl Zendaya, who is, and it might be a blessing in disguise, because you know how with the Disney characters, after they finish with their Disney, and if they're a triple threat, and Zendaya does sing and she does dance and she acts. So now I could see her graduating from Disney, like Miley Cyrus and the rest of them, and then they probably would have flipped her into a real sexy sort of a, you know, star, if they could. And then now I think with this and with her classy response and with the black community coming out in support of her, as well as a bunch of other people, I think that saved her from going into that real sex kitten, you know, role that Disney is known for. And I think Zendaya is going to end up being a really huge star. She's a very intelligent, talented, you know, young girl.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, let me say something here. You know what I'm saying? I think that the person who made that comment, and I'm saying the person, I'm not going to say her name because she's not worthy of me even recognizing her, really. But with that comment that she made to that young girl, what's her name, Zendaya? I forget her name.
Yes.
Zendaya.
That's probably catapulted her into stardom. Okay?
Yes,
she should be a big star.
Okay, you watch.
Yes,
you're going to see her on all the shows, and she's going to get her play.
Marty, let me just tell you who she is. She already is a star of right.
I know she is.
And that's why Gina's saying that they're putting her on the track. But it's one of the, she's already, I mean, that makes her a star of Roger. But she already is on that Disney track. What you were saying, Gina, I don't know necessarily if they're going to move her into the whole sex kid thing. I don't know if that was going to be a foregone conclusion, but it was certainly out of line. But I mean, the Oscars in general pretty much push around that subject matter. They were pretty kind of, you know, they were talking about them being so white, particularly this year, and I guess with the Selma movie being available or being coming out. But obviously, to me, I think that what happened was that they allowed all the black stuff got allowed for last year, and they probably didn't want to allow any more black stuff this year. But I don't know.
I think that was very insulting to the black community and to the Latino community, really, because God knows that there's so many different films that you could have chosen. And I was absolutely amazed that the Grammys or the, what was it?
The Oscars.
The Oscars. It was so white. You know, Selma, what happened to that? What happened to a few other things? I mean, that was so awful.
Well, I mean, it's also
amazing. It was just absolutely amazing.
You know,
it's interesting
comment,
that the president of the Academy is a black lady.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess that was the only defining moment in terms of them not being biased. But even at that, I mean, there was such a body of work this past year that certainly there should have been some recognition. But I heard a film critic say the other day, the reason why the gentleman from Nigeria that did portray Martin Luther King didn't win because this critic compared him to Denzel Washington when he did Malcolm X, somehow that was more riveting, and I just find that to be even offensive if that's the buzz going around Hollywood.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, what did he say? What did you say? He said what now?
Yes, I forgot who the critic was. It was somebody who comes on CBS regularly, but the analysis was that Denzel's portrayal of Malcolm X was far more cogent and riveting compared to the gentleman, the brother from Nigeria that played Dr. Martin Luther King in Selma. And,
What happens is that probably, you know, when you have there's more of a catharsis. The character goes through more. Malcolm X's character, that's probably what he was referring to, was that in Malcolm X movie, you have a guy going from the worst that he can be to the good. He makes a transition. It's all about Malcolm's transition into a different character. So that might be what he was talking about. But needless to say, we've run out of time with the conversation being as long as it is. And we had a really good time. We want to thank Antonio Fargas for calling in and talking to us and bringing us up to date on what he's been doing over all these years and being the cultural icon that he is. Want to thank Gina Payne Scott for calling in for Bermuda, giving us some perspective in that discussion.
And also, you know, we are going to be getting Richard Wesley, author, writer, screenwriter, who is having a talk at New Jersey Pat. We're going to be doing him at another time, and we'll be in touch with him. But join us then next week.
Okay, what? Also, Wayne.
Wayne Gilman
on the call.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Gina.
I'm the son, Eric Payne, and you are the mom.
Kay Thompson Payne.
All right.
Join us again next week for Kay Thompson Payne on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Kay Thompson Live.
Right. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m., shows are also archived. Kay Thompson Live on the blogtalkradio.com/Kay Thompson Live. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Once again, be cool.
Very good.
good news.